You are tuning in to the Milk Carton Series. I'm your host, Stephanie, and today we discuss the murder of Tracy Kirkpatrick. Hey guys, welcome back to the Milk Carton Series podcast. It's good to be back consistently. So today, guys, we're going to be discussing the murder of Tracy Lynn Kirkpatrick. Tracy was born on June 9, 1971 to the parents of Bill and Diane. She was the third of four children, which all included her sisters, Angie, Deanna, and a brother named Jack. While Tracy was born in East Liverpool, Ohio, her family would relocate to the Point Rocks of Maryland. Those who knew Tracy described her as being both funny and smart with a feisty attitude. I know someone like that. She had a good sense of humor with the love of people. Her friends would recall her as being the one to blast the music in her 10-year-old Pontiac Grand Prix, which she had bought with her own money. Tracy also had more of a reserved side to her, and she was also known for being quiet and shy. She was also an introspective young woman who liked her independence and was known for not allowing her picture to be taken. She was also compassionate. She had a trait that would just extend down to her loved ones, but she loved animals as well. She would often take in strays from around the neighborhood, not wanting to leave them out on their own. At 17 years old, Tracy was in her final year in high school. She was an honor student with a GPA that sat between 3.5 and 4.0. She had an interest in writing and poetry and often expressed her feelings through her work. The majority of her poems spoke of loneliness and was one of the published in a New American Poetry anthology. Given her dedication to her schoolwork, it came at no surprise to those who knew her that she would have her whole life planned out. Upon graduating, she was set to attend St. Mary's University to study accounting, with the later hopes of getting accepted into law school. On the evening of March 15, 1989, Tracy was working her first solo closing shift at Ailing's Women's Sportswear, located in the Westridge Shopping Center in Frederick, Maryland. It was one of the two part-time jobs the young girl held in order to pay for her university in the fall. At around 6 p.m., Diane stopped by the store to bring Tracy some dinner and found her alone reading a book, her normal thing she loved to read. The pair chatted for a bit, with Tracy telling her mother that she planned to head straight to bed upon getting home that night. 2 hours goes by. At around 8 p.m., Tracy's manager stopped by the store for a few minutes. It had been noted that the store's cash register did not record any sales after this time frame, and Tracy was again alone in the store from then on forward. When closing time came around 9 p.m., a security guard named Don Barnes Jr., who also worked as a sheriff's deputy for Frederick County, noticed that the store lights were still on. However, it didn't strike him as odd because he assumed one of the cashiers was on duty. You know, it's like most of the times you're prepping, you know how retail is. Lights are on, but you're still doing things, right? He began to grow concerned when 10:30 came and he circled around again and noticed that the lights were still on and the front door was unlocked. He then called out but received no response and continued into the store to investigate. When he came upon Tracy's body in the back storeroom, she had been stabbed several times in the chest and back. The police, you know, of course, came not too long after. When Tracy didn't return home at her expected time, Bill and Diane decided to drive to the shopping center. They were worried their daughter may have experienced car trouble, but also recalled that she had been late the previous night because she'd been talking to her ex-boyfriend, whom she recently decided to start dating again. When the pair arrived around 11:15 p.m., they noticed numerous police cars outside the store, which worried them. In anyone's right mind would worry you too, correct? It was not long after they had learned the fate of their daughter. So investigators at the scene found no motive for the murder. There was no sign of sexual assault or a struggle, and the store's cash receipts were still on the counter. As the door hadn't even been forced open and there was still money in the cash register, robbery was quickly ruled out. Despite her purse being missing, blood droplets were found in a nearby hallway leading to the store's loading dock and trash bins. And while no weapon was recovered, the wounds Tracy suffered indicated a knife had been used in the attack. As Tracy didn't appear to have any defense wounds, it was the working theory that she was killed by someone she knew. However, investigators didn't rule out that murder could have been committed by a drifter who'd been passing through Frederick. Now, there was numerous mistakes that were made during the initial investigation. The first one surrounds the doors to the back of the store, through which the murderer likely escaped. Investigators did not seize them and only examined them through the dim of a flashlight. The second error involved the store's phone records, which were not subpoenaed before the phone company erased them. A man who had been waiting in the front parking lot for his partner spoke with police and shared that he had not seen anything out of the ordinary that night. Given the evidence presented, it believed Tracy was killed between 8 p.m. when her manager stopped by the store and 10:30 when Don Barnes Jr. discovered her body. Tracy was eventually laid to rest in Oak Grove Cemetery in Freedom, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh. The case went cold until 3 months later when a man called into a nationwide confession hotline in Las Vegas, Nevada. The hotline was known for charging callers by the minute to record their confessions, which strangers could pay to listen. The man who called himself Don left the following message claiming to be Tracy's murderer. And this is what he says. "Hello, my name is Don and I'm calling from Frederick, Maryland. I know this is going to sound surprising, but 3 months ago, I stabbed a girl to death. And you might think I'm making this tape, I'm setting myself up to be caught, but there are a lot of guys named Don in Frederick. The girl I killed was working in a ladies' sportswear store. I often came by and talked to her when she was working alone. And one night when she was in the storeroom and we were talking, our conversation turned into an argument. So I took out a knife that I had and me at times," his note sounds a little confusing right here. I guess they could only write what they had, right? "And it says, a few days later, I realized I created a lot of sadness and I thought about turning myself in to the police. But whatever they do to me, they won't bring Tracy back. So I've decided that I better keep free because we have the death penalty in Maryland. Thanks for listening. I'm sorry about what I did, but nothing can change it. Bye." Could you imagine like someone going on a nationwide show and saying this? Like, I couldn't imagine. And then my thing is, if this is true and you killed this girl over an argument, oh Lord Jesus, let us pray. But this is what happens with people. People cannot control their emotions. People are very, what's the word I'm looking for? They move very quickly in their actions when they're upset. And that's why they tell people, you know, you got to calm down before you do anything that is irrational. So upon receiving the call, an attorney for the hotline forwarded the tape to Las Vegas police, who in turn forwarded to authorities in Frederick. Upon listening to the tape, they were convinced the man calling himself Don was the killer, as there was sincerity in his voice and he knew specific details about the murder. Investigators were also able to trace the call to a payphone inside a supermarket in Watersville, Maryland, approximately 8 miles from Frederick. Now, on October 10th, 1989, believing Don was trying to turn himself in, one of the investigators wrote on an open letter to him, which was published in the front page of the Frederick's News Post. It read, "I am personally willing to work with you to resolve this tragic situation, and I pray you now will come forward to relieve the hurt which Tracy's family and friends has suffered, as well as the pain which has consumed your life since that night." And that was pretty much all that was written. So about 2 weeks after the letter was published, a Massachusetts psychic by the name of Martha Woodworth contacted the Frederick Police Department, claiming a man she had been in contact with was obsessed with the case and had asked her to help him solve it. He said his name was Sean, and it appeared to be fascinated with homicides, especially Tracy's. He had sent her numerous newspaper clippings about the case through the mail, which prompted her to contact the authorities. Hoping they were onto something, investigators played part of the confession tape to Martha, after listening to it, she confirmed that Dawn and Sean were the same person. A look at the envelope the newspaper clipping had arrived in showed Sean reside in Watersville. Remember where the phone call came through for the Las Vegas Nation show, whatever it's called? So on the first anniversary of Tracy's murder, investigators asked four local radio DJs to play the confession tape in full. The tape was played on the radio station. Within 2 hours, someone had called in saying they recognized the voice. In total, three different individuals would call in and identify the voice as this belonging to the person named Sean. The positive ID of Sean being Dawn led investigators to pay him a visit, after which he pleaded the Fifth Amendment and refused to speak with them. It was also learned that his name was neither Sean nor Dawn. The next day, they returned to his residence with a search warrant, where they found newspaper clippings and material related to the case, items in which were sent to the Maryland State Police Crime Lab for analysis. They also obtained DNA sample. Now, despite the evidence they had pointing to the unnamed man, police were able to find enough to file charges against him. They weren't able to confirm he was at the scene of the crime of the, you know, the night of March 15th, 1989, or if he had any involvement, and since he's been cleared as a suspect. So to help bring in leads, local individuals put up $5,000 for reward money. In 1998, a DNA sample from the case was submitted for testing. However, the amount was insufficient to develop a genetic profile of the killer. As my goodness, this so sucks. Because it's like you feel like you're on to stuff and you're just like, really? And another sample was submitted in 2003. In March 2009, investigators sent away touch DNA for testing to a private contractor with the Maryland State Police, and it had been reported that they have samples from two individuals who are currently suspects in the case. The case had been presented to two cold case review panels over the year, one nationally and another from the Mid-Atlantic region, in hopes that this would solve the case. It was also taken to the Bidcock Society, which is a group of investigators who evaluate cold cases from across the world. The Frederick Police Department is still actively investigating the case, which is amongst the most well-known in the city. They still continue to receive information in the Forces Criminal Investigation Division. Lord, they have a cabinet of couple drawers devoted to all the files pertaining to the case. Recently, investigators have gone back and interviewed former detectives who previously worked the case in hopes of uncovering new clues, and they remain in regular contact with Kirkpatrick's family. And of course, by the police department, each new detective who takes on the case becomes truly affected by it, you know? They consult with predecessors discussing any new developments, annual reviewing the case, and any new ideas involving solving this case. So there are about three theories that are out there, and thought I'd share them with you guys. So the first primary theory in this case is that the security guard, Don Barge Jr., is responsible for Tracy's murder. According to his daughter, he was abusive towards her and her mother, and as such, she believes he was involved in the killing. His father was a former sheriff with Frederick County, which has led some to suggest that the potential cover-up has occurred in order to protect Don Barnes Jr. This could be facts. Because he was there, you know, that night. But I wonder, like, did he have any, you know, like, real full conversation with her? You know, I don't know about that one. But the next theory is, many detectives who worked on a case between 1992 and 1994, they alleged that an acquaintance of Tracy was responsible for her death, saying that he would visit the store that night to tell her he had feelings for her, but turned violent when she told him she didn't want to, you know, be with them. She wanted to remain friends. And according to the detective, he had brought the case to a grand jury from which 2/3 voted to indict, but the state's attorney office had declined to prosecute the case. While he claims that politics and personal agendas and people not doing their jobs are the reason the acquaintances were never arrested, those involved in the case say the indictment was not pursued because of circumstantial evidence. To avoid a suspect being protected by double jeopardy, it said they kept the case open in order to give future investigators the chance for more evidence that would secure a conviction. Wow. And that was a thought too, like maybe one of her friends came to the place, maybe in an argument got out, you know, like, I don't know, like arguments are real. So maybe something happened. It could easily be she didn't want to be with this person and they were upset. People get mad about those things. They really do. Now, the final theory was presented was that Tracy was the possible victim of the I-70 killer. The unknown serial killer is suspected of killing 6 store clerks in the Midwestern United States from 1992 to potentially 1994, with suspected victims in Indiana, Texas, Missouri, and Kansas. Those who follow this theory speculate that the I-70 killer was active prior to 1992. However, there is no evidence to suggest this, and as police have never identified a suspect in the murders, it is not known if he was actually involved in Tracy's murder. So sad, but that could be true, and I never heard of the I-70 killer, so I'm going to definitely look that up. I want to definitely look that up. I never heard of that. So we shall see about that. It's sad because you're working, trying to get your money together for your goals, your dreams, and then someone just takes your life. For what? For what? No reason at all. There's no reason that you take someone's life. I don't care how mad you get. No one deserves to die at the hands of someone. The Kirkpatricks remain in the Frederick area, and they continue to keep Tracy's memory alive, holding regular vigils at the West Ridge Shopping Center. Each year, they commemorate her birthday by bringing either yellow roses or carnations to a cherry tree they planted in honor at Brunswick High School. Tracy is said to have liked the cherry trees that blossom in Washington, D.C. In 2004, Deanna wrote a letter to her sister where she described making a photo collage as a Christmas gift for their parents in December 2013. She wrote that making the collage made her realize that Tracy's legacy continues to live on in her nieces and nephews. Digital creative specialist Paul Pelosi is currently working on a documentary, In the Silent Land, Who Killed Tracy Kirkpatrick? The family gave him permission to tell Tracy's story, and the film is set to currently be in production. Pelosi also has a GoFundMe page to help fund it. Those who are interested in this case or have any new information regarding Tracy Kirkpatrick are asked to reach out to the Frederick Police Department. Again, as any podcast, any video, all links will be down below so you guys can check it out. Such a sad story, and such a sad story that's not resolved because, one, being, you know, people didn't do their job, they didn't properly secure a crime scene, and two, you don't know who killed her. So it's another sad story that we add to our list, but it's great to get her name out there to tell her story, because one day her family will get the answers that they seek and the justice that they deserve. So guys, until the next episode on the Milk Carton Series podcast, I will see you. I'm sending love and light to everyone out there, and especially the Kirkpatricks. Bye guys.